Chapter 10. Investigation. The captain and the officers with him were attempting to discern the exact whereabouts of Mr. Wicks when Alex found Chris. After his confrontation with Buck and Mary, Wicks retreated to the little shanty town some distance away from Four Corners. At Wickstown, he ran the women under his stable with an iron hand while offering their delectable attractions to paying customers. Chris was preparing horses to ride out there, hoping to see if Q was nearby. Picard's reports claimed Q liked taking part as a bystander who could witness the play he set into motion without actually taking center stage. Since he had not shown himself during the confrontation with Bob and could not play the role of a bystander with a serial killer, this left Wicks. Although it was necessary for them to split up, Chris didn't like the idea. Even so, he wished he could leave Mary behind. Chris had no wish to have her anywhere near Wickstown. When Alex sought him out, her expression told him the worst had occurred. Like Ezra, Alex kept her emotions hidden beneath a mask of detachment, so when he saw her shaken, there could be only one reason. Where is he? Chris met Josiah when the counselor emerged from the tavern after Alex informed him of what had happened to Julia.
Inside.
Josiah motioned to the batwing doors of the saloon. Chris nodded slowly.
How is he?
He asked and immediately chided himself at the foolish question. He knew precisely what it was like to lose the woman one loved, and Chris's own reaction had been extreme. Why should Ezra be any different?
Bearing up, he's in there questioning the locals who found the body.
That did not surprise Chris. Ezra wasn't someone who showed his anguish. The security chief was fiercely private, even more so than Chris himself. Although Ezra's mother was a successful resort owner who now lived permanently on Risa, his youth was anything but easy. His official record read more like sordid fiction than an account of someone's life. Ezra had grown up on the pleasure cruise circuit. His mother, a fortune hunter of some sort, traveled across the galaxy, dragging her son to every place capable of producing get-rich-quick schemes. There were several husbands after her marriage to the Starfleet officer, who was Ezra's father. These suitors lasted long enough to learn only one man had Maud Standish's heart, her son. Mother and son moved through this precarious state of existence, sometimes flush, sometimes not, but always on the move. The consequence of this dysfunctional life was that Ezra became an impeccable judge of character. He could see something shady a mile away. His instincts were razor sharp, and his ability to see through the masks that often confused so many humans because of the number of alien faces that made up the galaxy was unparalleled. Chris often wondered about the scene when Ezra announced to his mother he was entering Starfleet Academy. It must have been one hell of a surprise. Until that point, Ezra assisted his mother's schemes and played the tables himself. As a card player, he had no peer anywhere. Someone once claimed Ezra made the Ferengi cry. Ezra made it to the Academy on merit alone, and after accepting his instructor's recommendations that his talents lay in security, Ezra never looked back. Chris met him when he was a lieutenant. Ezra's canny sense stood out among the security officers stationed in Yorktown. Chris was a new first officer about to rendezvous with the Rutherford. Ezra impressed him with his handling of different races and his ability to see through a lie. By the time Chris boarded the Rutherford, Chris knew when he had received his first command that there was no other choice for chief of security.
Where's Nathan?
Alex peered through the doors and saw only Ezra inside.
He's gone off with the...
Josiah paused as he forced himself to say it.
He's gone with Julia.
None of them could speak, and the silence that fell over them was brief but lasting. Chris had lost crewmen before. It was the part of the job no captain liked but had to endure. However, it seemed worse because it was Julia and caused by something as foolish as Q's games.
Was she like the others?
Josiah exchanged a glance with Alex before the counselor answered.
Yes, strangled with the trademark coins in her eyes. But if it wasn't for her clothes and hair, we wouldn't have recognized her.
What?
He broke almost every bone in her face, Captain. Ezra figures she tried to fight him off, which only made the killer angry. He probably did it to subdue her.
Chris supposed that made sense. Julia would not sit still and allow such a fate to befall her. Still, hearing this made Chris more determined to get the rest of his people away from this simulated reality. Without saying another word, Chris stepped onto the floor of the saloon and captured Ezra's attention. The security chief whispered something to the old man across the table before excusing himself to meet the captain. As he approached, Chris noticed his expression was stonier than ever.
Ezra, how are you doing?
I am fine, Captain.
Ezra's voice was low and grieving but did not show someone incapable of doing his job. Nor would Chris try to stop him from doing it when it was probably the only thing holding Ezra together.
I don't know what to say.
Chris, I appreciate the sentiment, but right now, I do not wish to think about what has happened until I catch the culprit responsible. I failed her once. I will not do so again by allowing her killer to go free.
I understand. What have you found out?
It happened quickly. I suspect the murder occurred before we noticed Julia was missing. He took advantage of our confrontation with Mr. Top Hat Bob and the time taken for everyone to emerge after it was all said and done. By the time people paid attention, the body was already there.
Ezra tried to remind himself that the body he was speaking about was not Julia. Julia was dead. That lifeless figure he saw earlier was not his Julia, and if he kept thinking of it as her, he could not function. Ezra was at the edge of a precipice that would swallow him whole if he gave into despair. Instead, he forced himself to remain in the precarious balance between sorrow and rage.
So, what's next?
I am uncertain. This town is not that large, so I will find him. A Pinkerton detective visited Josiah when he first appeared in the simulation. This man implied he might know more about this killer than I do. I am endeavoring to locate him.
I would have thought he would be on the scene after you found her.
So did I.
Ezra said thoughtfully, the comment churning inside his head. After an instant, he looked up at the captain once again, the temporary fog having dissipated from his mind.
In any case, I shall meet the gentleman soon enough.
All right, we'll carry on as planned. We'll be going to find this Wix and hopefully, Q.
Take care, Chris. I am not entirely sure how you will deal with this Q when you encounter him, but it is safe to assume the game he is playing is rather deadly.
I hear you. Take it easy.
The captain tipped his hat slightly in Ezra's direction and was on his way again, disappearing past the batwing doors. Ezra walked onto the boardwalk, drawn to Josiah and Alex's voices. He assumed they were most likely receiving some parting instructions regarding his state of mind from the captain. Ezra could hardly blame Chris for doing so if such were the case. The captain could not allow friendship to dictate his actions. As security chief, Ezra understood the folly of this better than anyone else. However, when he stepped through the doors onto the wooden walkway running past the saloon, Ezra realized Josiah and Alex were not talking to Chris about any orders regarding himself but to a stranger. Alex turned to him as he approached.
This is Silas Poplar,
the Pinkerton detective,
Ezra stated firmly. Poplar was young, aged somewhere in his early 30s. Ezra noticed Poplar scrutinizing him on approach. Something stirred within the security chief that pushed aside Julia's death and brought all those hunter's instincts inside him to bear. Whether Poplar realized what he inspired, Ezra could not say for sure. But there was a moment between men where battle lines were drawn, even if they were not spoken.
You are one of the men charged with guarding this town against mishap, I assume.
Poplar replied, sounding not at all impressed by the title.
Yes, I am, although it appears I was too late to prevent the latest infraction,
Ezra remarked, showing no signs of Julia's death on his face. Alex noted Ezra's cool detachment of someone whose mind was working fast and furious. The science officer considered Ezra one of her closest friends. His ability to go for the jugular was something she admired and respected. They often found themselves on the same side of any argument concerning the security of a Maverick. It was a strange kind of solidarity when their individual roles on the ship were so different.
I am aware of that, but unfortunately, our opportunity to catch this man has slipped through our fingers. He will not kill again for some time, and it will usually be in another town.
However, as Poplar said this, his gaze was fixed on Josiah. Ezra did not miss the unspoken insinuation.
Is there something about Mr. Sanchez that inspires your interest?
Ezra asked, wanting to see his reaction, or for that matter, any response.
I have it on good authority that Mr. Sanchez was in Vesta City 2 nights ago. He has still not produced a suitable alibi where he was at the time of those murders.
Do you have any reason to believe he is responsible beyond that scant fact?
Not until the bodies began appearing here.
That hardly means anything, Mr. Poplar. You were also in Vesta City, and now you are in Four Corners. Am I to assume you might have committed these crimes simply because you were in the same place at the same time?
The suggestion outraged Poplar, and his face turned red from indignation.
I have been tracking this killer for some time now. You would suspect me?
No.
Ezra shook his head slowly, monitoring the man's response with hidden scrutiny.
However, Mr. Sanchez was with Miss Stiles and myself at the time of the second killing. There is no way he could have committed the crime. Since you brought up the point, I would like to know where you were at the time of the murders.
I was investigating.
Poplar responded smoothly, but Ezra could look straight past his eyes to know Poplar was rattled with uncertainty.
I see. You say the killer murders twice and moves on. How much time do we have before the next set of killings?
Not long,
Poplar answered with less arrogance.
The urge takes him soon enough. It's a physical need. He can't quench a desire that must happen.
Ezra, we have to find this guy before he leaves town. Once he's gone, he'll just do this somewhere else.
Ezra?
Poplar shifted his gaze back to Ezra with surprise. When he realized the gambler was staring at him hard, Poplar recovered quickly and produced another quick answer.
You must be the famous gambler Ezra I've heard about.
Ezra nodded, that same stony mask on his face.
Yes, Ezra Stanford.
So you are he.
The Pinkerton man grinned, pleased he escaped unscathed from this minefield. Alex's eyes widened and almost corrected Ezra when she deduced the reason for his gaffe.
If I could impose on you to stay for a day, I would like to confer with you some more. The killer will not attempt to leave town because it would be rather noticeable for him to flee so soon after the murders. This is a small community. Everyone is aware of everyone, and any hasty departures may cause undue incrimination.
Poplar's smile faded from view.
I am at your disposal, of course. Would you mind if I examined the body?
Ezra did not like the idea of this man being anywhere near Julia's form, even dead, but he could not afford to raise the man's suspicions. If Poplar left town, they would never catch him, and with their needing to be in four corners to uncover what plan Q had in store for them, Ezra could not go after him. Fantasy world or not, that was no idle promise he made to Julia.
Of course.
Ezra complied politely.
You know the way to the Undertakers?
I was there when the first victim was found.
Poplar answered.
I shall see you about, Mr. Poplar.
Ezra called after him. None of the Starfleet officers spoke until Poplar was out of sight and earshot.
He knew your name.
Alex exploded.
He knew it even before he heard me say it.
That's why I had to confirm it was not Ezra Standish he knew, but simply Ezra.
The security officer continued to stare in the direction Poplar had gone.
Well, Counselor, what do you think?
I think we have a definite possibility.
Josiah nodded, aware of what Ezra suspected. While Ezra was interrogating, Josiah studied Poplar's behavior, and everything he saw confirmed the worst.
I think you are right. When we confronted Poplar about being the killer, he was more than a little defensive, not with the outrage of innocence but of being exposed. If we had the resources of the Maverick, would be at this moment trying to learn if he was in all those different places before the murders occurred or after. I would bet a fortune to say it was before, although we'll never really know the truth.
I think he wants to be caught,
Josiah stated.
I beg your pardon.
Alex stared, astonished.
He was trying to pin it on you. That doesn't sound like a man who wants to turn himself in.
Josiah understood her skepticism.
I know, but this kind of psychosis is difficult to label. In one instance, he's not a sociopath. The urge, as he calls it, is a very personal description, and if he truly did not want to be caught, he would have left the minute the deaths occurred, not pretending to be the lone crusader for justice. He is seeking justice, but he is trying to get others to see he might be the one to focus their attention. Of course, the part of him that kills also tries to protect himself. His mind is always in conflict.
You mean it's a mess?
Mess or not, if he killed Julia, I will kill him.
Chapter 11. Evidence. With every fiber of his being, he knew Poplar killed Julia, but the security chief inside Ezra Standish refused to let him abandon the laws of due process. He had no proof other than suspicion, and despite the anger and horror he felt inwardly at Julia's loss, Ezra knew he had to be absolutely sure before he confronted the man. Part of Ezra wondered why he was taking such precautions when everything in this place was nothing but a fake, a reproduction created by a bored, omnipotent entity. Why should he care about being so exact when everything here was an illusion? Because Julia's death was no illusion, and if he murdered Poplar in cold blood, that would be no illusion either. Once the man disappeared from their midst, Ezra regarded his companions. For the moment, Nathan was conducting his examinations on Julia's body, and Ezra left him to his work until Nathan was ready to submit his findings. Despite his stiff upper lip, Ezra could not promise he would not crumble if forced to look at her lifeless form again. As it is, Ezra was numb inside. The pain had turned the rest of him into stone and would remain so until he could mourn her.
Commander, it would be best if you spoke to people around town about Mr. Poplar's whereabouts this morning. I will wager a year's pay he did not see or talk to anyone.
Agreed.
Alex shared his need for confirmation, even though she craved vengeance for Julia's death. The chief engineer was a friend, and Alex was highly protective of the few she had.
Shall I be discreet?
No.
No?
Josiah looked at the security chief.
Isn't it smarter to not overplay our hand?
Ezra, who knew better than anyone how a play was to be made, shook his head.
I do not wish Commander Stiles to be discreet. If Poplar is innocent, then he should have no reason to fear her interrogation of the good citizens of this community. If he has reason to fear, then provocation is what we need to see if we are right.
It may also engender a violent response. You should not underestimate just how desperate the half of him that kills wishes to continue, even if he wants to be caught.
I underestimate nothing.
Ezra said softly, images of Julia's bruised face flashing in his mind as he spoke. Josiah didn't reply, supposing Ezra knew very well what Silas Poplar could do after seeing Julia's body.
Commander, if you would so please?
Alex nodded and came forward enough to give Ezra a little squeeze on his shoulder.
We'll catch him, Ezra. He'll pay for what he did.
Ezra responded to her efforts with a slight nod before pulling away, leaving Alex to make her own departure. She headed towards the direction of the saloon where her own investigations into Poplar's whereabouts would begin. It seemed a logical choice because the bars in a small town like this were the hub of information. Not much was going on in Four Corners that escaped the eyes of its patrons, and if Poplar was genuine in his inquiries, they would soon know it. Ezra watched her go, commending her choice secretly. He would have started there himself.
What are we going to do?
Josiah asked.
You, my friend, are going back to your church. I am uncertain of whether Poplar suspects we believe him to be the killer. Chances are good he does. If that is the case, then the only way he can be certain of leaving Four Corners is to blame someone else for the crime. Since he has already made it clear you are his choice, I see no reason for him to alter that plan.
What a fine counselor Ezra would have made, Josiah thought. The security chief's insight into the minds of those around him would have made him an exceptional analyst.
If you think it is best I stay put, I'll do that. What are you going to do?
I will follow Mr. Poplar, ensuring he does not abscond.
Josiah nodded, although he almost wished Poplar would leave Four Corners because the attempt would prove without a doubt he was the murderer they were seeking. From inside their hiding place, Billy Travis realized this might not be a game. He watched with increasing horror the trials his friends were being subjected to, and the death of Julia Pemberton felt like cold water splashing across his face. Watching someone he cared for, whom he remembered for her kindness when she allowed him to roam about her engineering deck, battered to death, was not something he ever wanted to see. In fact, he would carry that memory around with him for a long time indeed. When this began, it seemed like so much fun, and it was. Billy found a new friend who seemed just as neglected and forgotten as he was. Quinn listened to his stories about Chris and the others avidly, and when the boy created this holodeck reality, it was fun because Billy believed none of it was real. Yet Julia's death felt real, just like the grief expressed by all the senior staff, especially Ezra Standish. It had been fun watching Chris fight Top Hat Bob and somewhat surprising to see how his mother handled the nasty Mr. Wicks. He did not know his mother could be so resourceful. He only thought Commander Stiles could fight like that and wondered briefly what else his mother could do he knew nothing about. However, when Poplar turned up on the scene, it was clear the man was not fun. In fact, he was terrifying. Even though Billy looked young by the standards of human children, he was still Vulcan and far more developed. Billy could not understand why Quinn elected to add Poplar to the stable of Magnificent Seven villains because Poplar was far more complex than any gun-toting criminal.
Quinn, why did you kill Julia? I wanted to know what it was to die.
Quinn answered innocently, unable to comprehend what upset his new friend.
You spoke about how every creature in the universe lives or dies, and I wanted to know why.
You don't learn by making someone die.
Billy cried with exasperation, unable to believe Quinn could not understand this and felt responsible for putting the idea in Quinn's head.
She's not really dead, is she?
Of course she is. I can't learn anything unless it's real.
You got to make this stop.
Billy cried out, realizing if Julia could die, so could everyone else. The idea his mother could disappear from his life as surely as his father had was too much for Billy. When his father died, Billy wanted to die too. Until Chris Larrabee entered his life, Billy had not realized how much of a void Sion's death left in him. However, nothing would heal the vortex of despair if anything happened to his mother. His mother made everything bearable. She dried his tears and told him it was no great sin to be different. No matter how lonely or isolated he felt from the other children, Billy could always rely on her to hold him in her warm arms and make all the fear and pain disappear to a distant place. If she were gone, Billy could not go on without her. If Quinn did not understand death because he had never experienced it, He could unwittingly take Billy's mother without even realizing what kind of torment he would be inflicting.
Why?
Quinn looked at him strangely, unable to understand why Billy was upset.
I thought we were having fun.
We're not having fun when people die, Quinn. That's no fun at all. I want this to stop before anyone else gets hurt.
I want to play still.
Quinn said defiantly, his lips curling up into a bit of pout.
I want to see them fight some more.
I told you to make it stop.
Billy declared, unaware of what he was dealing with and thus having no fear of it, tried a more direct way of getting through to the boy. Grabbing Quinn by the collar, Billy started shaking Quinn hard. His newfound friend did not know how to deal with physical confrontation and reacted until Billy's tiny fist met his jaw. Reflexively, Quinn reacted, and a flash of light followed, sending Billy into the air before landing hard on the ground.
You struck me.
Quinn looked at Billy, confused.
Why?
Because you're hurting people.
No, I'm not. I'm just playing.
Not caring Quinn could hurt him as badly as those he was trying to save, Billy lunged at Quinn again. Josiah Sanchez entered his church and stopped short. There was little else he could do when he saw the sight awaiting him once he stepped into its hallowed walls. The violence left behind was an affront to what the place symbolized. Josiah felt his outrage flare even more than it already had. He proceeded down the walkway between the pews, studying everything closely. If Ezra were here, Josiah suspected the chief would guess in an instant how events had played out with the clues left behind. Ezra was not wrong about Poplar wanting to implicate him in the murder. Poplar had staged the scene perfectly, confirming Ezra's suspicion the Pinkerton man was their killer. Still, Josiah did not know whether it was wise bringing the security chief to see this since Ezra's restraint was being held by a threat. Unfortunately, Josiah could see no way around it, and Ezra would resent it if he thought they were trying to spare his feelings. Josiah stepped into the center of the crime scene, studying the blood on the floor, its crimson viscosity seeping slowly into the wood, leaving a stain no amount of scrubbing could ever clean. Shredded remains of the rope, covered in blood where it rubbed raw the skin of its captive, lay against the floor. The sight of all that blood suddenly ignited a spark of clarity in his mind, prompting the counselor towards the door, searching for Alex. It did not take him long to find the science officer at the bar of the Standish Tavern, the establishment owned by the gambler Ezra played with such perfection. Although he knew he should have brought his thought to Ezra first, Josiah felt Alex could keep a cooler head unless it involved a Cardassian ghoul who was once in charge of a rape camp. Alex stood at the counter, talking to the pretty young barmaid who ran the tavern. She was amid a rather intense discussion Josiah noticed when suddenly a large burly man approached the two women. Judging by the stagger and the man's walk, Josiah guessed the local was suitably drunk, and the leer on his face as he eyed Alex told the counselor what was on his mind.
Ladies ain't allowed in the saloon.
The man interrupted the conversation between Alex and the barmaid with a slur. Alex offered the man a sidelong glance before returning to a discussion regarding Poplar's whereabouts, refusing to be baited. Apparently, Poplar had taken a room in one of the lodging houses in town, and the barmaid was knowledgeable enough to know which one it was. She had no difficulty furnishing its location when Alex explained why. Buck had programmed the character to exhibit all the traits that made Inez Russillo a respected member of the Maverick.
I said,
the man repeated himself, his drawl and slur becoming more exaggerated when he realized he was being disregarded as little more than a nuisance.
Ladies ain't allowed in here.
Alex took a deep breath and met his gaze.
Look, I don't want any trouble. I'm here for some information. Now, why don't you go sleep it off? I see.
She said politely. The barmaid's expression became hard while her hands disappeared behind the counter.
Ladies ain't allowed unless they're whores.
Alex nodded and started to turn when suddenly, she swung around and threw a roadhouse punch square into the man's nose. The squelch of snapping bone followed a cry of pain as she grabbed his disorientated head and slammed it hard onto the countertop, knocking out whatever consciousness he had left. He slumped to the floor wordlessly, and Alex looked over her shoulder at the other men in the room, staring at her with wide-eyed astonishment.
Anybody else got a problem with me being in here?
Silence followed.
I didn't think so.
Josiah could not suppress the smile that stole across his face when he reached the two women and gave Alex a look that bordered on disapproval and amusement.
What?
Never mind.
Josiah shook his head and remembered he was here on serious business, even if Alex's behavior allowed him to forget that momentarily. The barmaid, realizing they had business to discuss, withdrew to attend to her other customers.
I just came from my church.
It looks like he killed Julia there.
Are you sure?
I found blood and rope. Ezra's right. He's trying to implicate me.
Of course, Alex thought. It made perfect sense to kill Julia in Josiah's church if Poplar was trying to frame him for the murders. If not for the fact she and Ezra could vouch for the counselor's whereabouts, those who sat in judgment would have every reason to believe it was true. Unfortunately, Poplar had not counted on Josiah having an alibi.
We better find Ezra. Where is he?
He's tailing Poplar, ensuring the man doesn't run out of town. I actually came to find you because I've got an idea.
What sort of idea?
We know Poplar committed the crime, but we couldn't prove it until now. What I saw in my church gave me an idea. There's blood, lots of it.
After how badly he beat her, I'm not surprised. If we didn't know her previously, none of us would have recognized her at all.
I know, but for that kind of damage and so much blood spilled, Poplar must have been pretty soiled in it himself.
Alex caught on immediately.
You mean he must have changed his clothes after the murder? During the fighting with Bob, he would have enough time to leave the body in the street and return to his hotel to change. With everyone keeping their heads down to avoid being shot, he could have gotten off the street before anyone noticed.
That's right. Which means he would not have much time before we saw him to wash those clothes or dispose of them. He can't launder it without raising suspicion, and I think he's too smart to risk being seen throwing them away. I think he was arrogant enough to believe no one would suspect him, so he would wait until it was safe to take care of the problem.
Alex's eyes flared in understanding. The man she attacked earlier was still on the floor. He would be there for some time, judging by the blood pooling down his face and the slight bubbles of spittle he produced as he continued to doze in his unconscious state.
We need to find Ezra.
Let Ezra do what he's doing. We don't want Poplar getting out of town, not when we could have the evidence to prove he's the murderer.
I hear you. Poplar's got a room in the lodging house across the street.
Alex stared past the patrons of the saloon to the dusty street outside.
If you're right, we'll find his soiled clothes there, and then we'll have him.
That would make me feel better. Ezra's riding the edge of control as it is. I can see how badly he wants revenge, and there will come a time when he won't be able to stop himself.
I don't know if we should, Josiah.
Alex replied as they started out of the establishment.
Poplar's a monster. He's killed women long before we got here. And if we do nothing to stop him, he'll be doing it long after he leaves. Due process may take a battering, but at least it's better than having a bunch of innocent women die if he were to go free.
She might be right, Josiah had to admit, but it was not Poplar he worried about most. It was Ezra. Chapter 12. Confession. After Josiah's discovery in his church and ensuring Poplar was still busy at the mortuary where Nathan was conducting his autopsy, Alex and the counselor headed to the Pinkerton detective's lodgings to perform their search. They did not know where Ezra was at the moment but assumed he would be wherever Poplar was to be found. Alex knew if the security chief wished to disappear into the background, no one would find him. The lodgings Poplar currently occupied lay on the other side of town under the ownership of a woman who called herself Lady Angel. Lady Angel was not eager to allow them entry into Poplar's room, mainly because he was what she called a boarder who didn't give her any trouble and paid in advance. At least until Alex explained what they suspected him of doing. While she seemed unconvinced, she understood the importance of knowing for sure if he was guilty. When Alex pushed open the door, she heard the buzzing of flies. This was not unusual since the window was open, allowing the annoying insects to enter the room. However, it raised Alex's suspicion somewhat for a town like Four Corners, where dust, stables, and outhouses were undoubtedly more inviting to the average housefly than a lodging room. Josiah followed her closely as they moved deeper inside. The bed remained unmade, and Poplar's only piece of luggage was a carpet bag stored beneath it. As Alex knelt down to pick up the bag, Josiah examined the rest of the room and noted how ordered it was, except for the rumpled sheets on his bed. He kept a tidy room with everything in its place, save a basket in the corner. The wicker hamper seemed to be the source of all the flies buzzing about the room. Josiah approached the basket cautiously, his arrival disbanding the insects to the ceiling in annoyance. Josiah looked down into the hamper and saw a tumble of clothes at the bottom. Taking a deep breath, he reached into the basket. His fingertips felt the wet fabric. He recoiled a little from its slick feel but forced himself to clamp his fist around the material and retrieve it from its hiding place.
I found something.
He looked at Alex with distaste.
Me too.
Alex announced proudly, dropping the carpet bag onto the mattress.
You first.
Josiah was more than happy to relinquish his find against the sheets and immediately wiped his hands on his pants after. The offending garments were a shirt and jacket, all heavily smeared with blood. If there were any lingering doubts about Poplar's guilt, it was more or less vanquished at the sight of those crimson-stained clothes. With a hollow sensation in his stomach, Josiah looked at the damning evidence before him and knew the blood attracting the flies was that of Julia's. He supposed it was just as well Ezra was not here.
I guess that confirms it then.
Josiah could only nod.
I guess it does.
He killed her.
Alex whispered, trying to calm her anger at how helpless Julia must have felt when she was bound and brutalized.
When everyone was inside because of our fight with Top Hat Bob, he moved the body out in the street and came back here to get cleaned up.
He was still pretty confident about pinning it on me back then, so he wasn't worried about hiding this.
Josiah regarded the incriminating evidence.
Well, not that we need it.
Alex said after a moment, looking away from the blood-soaked material.
We should see if there's anything else in here.
She turned to the carpet bag and opened it, not expecting to find anything more damning than those soiled clothes. Until she saw the glint of something shiny at the bottom of the bag. Josiah caught her expression immediately.
What is it?
Look.
Alex gestured to the bag, and Josiah leaned forward to see what had left her speechless. Taped up neatly in brown paper with only the top face of the first coin showing was the gleam of a silver dollar, polished with care. The same silver dollars that covered each of the victim's eyes. Alex said nothing as she reached in and pocketed the find, having no intention of allowing this evidence out of her sight for any reason. Once she ensured it was safely in her possession, Alex forced the bag shut, hearing the metallic latch click into place before raising her eyes to meet Josiah's.
All right, let's hang this son of a bitch.
If there was one thing Ezra knew about people, it was when they were running scared. Even though Poplar did not notice Ezra keeping him under close surveillance, the man appeared nervous. Alex was correct in her assertion if Ezra did not wish to be seen, he would not be. Thus, Poplar went about his business with no knowledge Ezra was watching. The more Ezra studied the Pinkerton detective, the more convinced he became Poplar murdered Julia. Only a strict reverence for due process kept Ezra from doing what was necessary, even in this facsimile world created by the Q entity. While engaged in a game with opponents who wanted to test the skills of the gambler he played, Ezra watched the door of the Undertaker's office after Poplar entered a short time ago. The detective claimed he wanted to question Nathan regarding the findings of Julia's autopsy. While Ezra spared himself the horror of seeing the woman he loved cut open, he did not intend to let Poplar escape and found this unobtrusive corner where he could continue to observe. At the same time, Ezra laid a straight on the table. Poplar emerged from the office with Nathan, who did not seem at all impressed. Ezra's victory produced a rumble of annoyance and disappointment around the table, but Ezra paid little attention to them. He concentrated on what was taking place outside the Undertaker's front door. Poplar and Nathan's conversation concluded when Poplar turned away from Nathan and started walking in the opposite direction.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, but I must take my leave.
He scooped up his winnings to leave. Everyone at the table frowned, watching their money disappear into his pockets. Ezra hardly cared and knew their defeat would not ruffle these players. When Nathan crossed the street, Ezra paid his tab and hurried through the swing doors to join Nathan outside.
Ezra,
Nathan greeted. The doctor had been concerned about the Southerner since they discovered Julia's body and knew this length of time could not possibly be enough to assuage the man's grief.
How are you doing?
Ezra did not waste time with idle conversation. His eyes were already searching the street for Poplar.
Where did he go?
Where did who go?
Poplar, where did he go?
The urgency in Ezra's voice immediately produced an answer from Nathan.
That way.
He glanced in the direction of the lodging house.
Why?
It's highly likely he might have killed Julia.
The security chief answered without skipping a beat and continued walking toward the lodging house, expecting Nathan to follow. Strangely enough, this revelation did not surprise Nathan. Poplar gave Nathan what could only be called the creeps, and Ezra's statement explained why. Nathan fell into stride with Ezra, who was hell-bent on putting Poplar in his sights once again.
What makes you think that?
By his inability to account for his whereabouts when Julia died, I have questioned enough perpetrators in my lifetime, and to quote a colloquialism, I have to say, that man is dirty, I can smell it.
Nathan could sense something in Ezra's voice that intensified his concern. He empathized with Ezra's anguish, unable to imagine what it would feel like to lose Rain. But the security chief was a man always in control of himself. A man in such command of his emotions was in danger of erupting spectacularly when the moment warranted it. The healer feared grief and rage were carrying Ezra away on a tide of destruction his adept emotional control could not restrain. Nathan feared he might cross the line if he believed Poplar was Julia's murderer. They were near the lodging house's main entrance when they heard its door swing open. Ezra pulled Nathan and himself behind the cover of the building they were walking to avoid being seen. As they hid behind the corner of the hardware store, Poplar emerged from the front of the lodging house. This time, there was no calm, deliberate demeanor hiding the evidence of his guilt. Panic filled his face when he stepped out into the light, scanning the street for evidence of pursuit.
Something has happened.
What?
Nathan whispered as he observed over Ezra's shoulder. Poplar didn't see either of them, but then the man was in such a state of heightened fear that Nathan doubted he was paying all that much attention. Anyway.
I do not know.
Ezra shook his head, unable to fathom what could have shocked Poplar's demeanor so wholly. Whatever it was, Ezra did not have time to ponder the situation because it took a split second for Ezra to determine Poplar's destination as the detective broke into a run.
He is leaving!
Ezra exclaimed and moved out of his hiding place, no longer worried about being seen. Silas Poplar did not notice he was being followed. He ran through the streets blindly, with only one thought in his mind, to reach the livery and his horse so he could escape Four Corners with his life. When he found his room ransacked, followed by his landlady's confession that she allowed Josiah Sanchez and the town doctor entry, he knew the worst had happened. For so long, the heinous acts he carried weighed upon his mind. The faces of his victims plagued him so many nights, filled with terrible dreams of strangled cries and terrified eyes dimming as the life oozed from their bodies. So many he could not stand to look, whose eyes he had to cover with the silver dollars, just like those used to pay someone else he had loved who betrayed him. His victims followed him like the Furies pursuing Orestes. He knew deep down inside that what he did was wrong when the sober light of day allowed him to feel grief for his crimes, but not enough to stop. The urge that came when the sun went down was too strong to ignore, and he would become the very worst of predators, the one who killed for no reason. Ezra lost sight of Poplar when they rounded the corner, but it was no mystery where Poplar was going. Starfleet health protocols ensured its officers could run 5 miles without faltering, and the distance to the livery was negligible. Nathan kept up with them stride for stride, and when they heard the slamming of the wooden doors leading to the stable, they knew the quarry was inside attempting to make his escape.
Nathan!
Ezra glanced at the doctor as they neared the door.
Be careful! He is a cornered animal at the moment. He will shoot!
Nathan nodded in understanding, aware this was no holodeck and any injuries incurred would not be simulated but real. They could die in this place, as Julia had proven so prolifically.
In that case,
Nathan cracked a smile, hiding his fear in a joke.
You go first.
The security chief advanced cautiously towards the main stable doors. With his gun drawn, Ezra was more than prepared to fire when suddenly the doors flew open. Ezra and Nathan dropped to the ground as the horse rushed past them with Poplar, forcing it forward by digging his heels into the animal's flank. The sharp kick in its sides made it neigh in protest at the rough handling, but Poplar did not seem to care, concerned only with making his escape from town.
Poplar!
Ezra's cry forced Poplar to look over his shoulder. The distraction was all the time Ezra needed to take aim and fire. The explosion of sound followed the gunshot, but instead of Poplar tumbling to the ground from his saddle, his horse reared up on its hind legs, stinging from the lead that nicked its rump. The abrupt action dislodged Poplar from the saddle, and the Pinkerton detective landed hard on the ground, kicking up a cloud of dust upon impact. Ezra closed it, having seen the gun at Poplar's hip and refusing to give the man any chance to use it on himself or on Nathan. There had been enough death today.
I would not advise it.
Ezra said coldly as he saw Poplar recovering from his fall enough to reach for the smooth wooden handle of the weapon nestled in his holster. His fingers barely touched the butt of the gun when Ezra made his warning. Poplar swallowed, feeling his heart pounding in his chest and yet trying to make some kind of recovery in the wake of his rather incriminating actions. He stood up, dusting the dirt from his person. An ugly scrape formed on his cheek from the fall, and an uneven line of blood was running down the skin.
What is the meaning of this?
I was about to inquire the same,
Ezra asked calmly.
Where do you think you were going?
I am not under suspicion.
Poplar bit back, but his voice shook.
I do not have to account for my whereabouts to you or anybody.
Considering what we discussed earlier, I thought we had an understanding or a professional rapport even. You should have told me you were leaving. Actions such as these make me wonder what could hasten you to leave.
We had nothing, and I don't need to give you a reason to leave. You have no right to prevent me from doing so.
I'm afraid that's not entirely true.
Alexandra Stiles announced herself with that statement.
Josiah and I have something that might refute that.
All eyes turned to Alex and Josiah, who heard the commotion and came to investigate, sensing Ezra and Poplar would be at its center. Alex went to Ezra's side as Josiah and Nathan, both armed, drew their weapons and aimed their barrels firmly in Poplar's direction.
We found this in his room at the lodging house.
Alex handed the roll of coins to Ezra. Ezra said nothing and stared at the gleaming roll of silver dollars in his hands. Here it was, the hard evidence he needed. Now Ezra understood why Poplar ran. Once Poplar returned to his room and learned someone else had been there and found the necessary evidence to convict him, he panicked and tried to escape while he still could. If Ezra had not followed him, he might have succeeded.
We also found clothes in his room soiled with blood. The means of finding out for sure is impossible, but I think we know it's Julia's.
This is a frame. You're trying to incriminate me. It will never stand up in a court of law.
Come on, Silas.
Josiah spoke in those soft, soothing tones with the ability to convince Moriarty to turn over a new leaf.
You want to stop. I can see the pain in your eyes, the need for repentance. You didn't want to hurt those girls. How you took care of them after killing them makes that plain enough to see.
Poplar's eyes shifted to Josiah, almost compelled by the counselor's words to listen.
I didn't do it.
Yes, you did. You know you did, and you're sorry. You're making them pay for something someone else did, Silas. Something they have no way of changing for you, but you didn't have a choice, did you? When you see them, you see her, and you can't fight it. You've been a slave to it all your life, and you want to stop as much as we want you to. I understand.
Poplar blinked, and a tear rolled down his cheek as he listened to Josiah, the man he wanted to blame for his sins, who possessed an open conduit into his soul and understood his pain. It felt good to know he was no longer trapped in his shadowy world alone, that someone finally knew what it was to be him.
I never wanted to hurt them,
he whispered, staring into Josiah's eyes.
I didn't want them to die, but I couldn't help it. I just wanted them to listen, like she wouldn't listen.
Ezra was listening. He was listening closely to the confession that made the truth incontrovertible. This man admitted he killed all those poor women in many cities across this manufactured land. It did not matter if Q created this world. This world existed, and those women had died just as surely as Julia. Ezra thought about Julia and his last words to her. Words that should not be taken away by anyone leaving this life. 1,000 knives pierced his heart. He could not breathe, could not think of anything else but the fire of emerald eyes that now existed only in his memories. She was no longer beautiful, no longer warm with love, and spirited with fire. She was just dead. A slab of meat growing colder in the Undertaker's office. Dead meat. The Derringer slid neatly out of its hiding place beneath his sleeve and into his palm with one smooth movement. Ezra pulled the trigger with the same lightning reflexes he used to handle a phaser. He did not know there were tears in his eyes when the gun fired. Did not feel the moisture against his skin when the small bullet slammed into the center of Poplar's forehead, spurting blood and bone as it tore the back of his skull apart. He might have been conscious of Alex's shocked cry or Josiah's and Nathan's horrified gasps. He was sure bystanders watching the proceedings might have screamed, but Ezra was so far from hearing he could not be sure. Julia was still dead, and though killing Poplar satisfied his revenge, it did nothing to heal his wounded heart. He watched dispassionately as the man collapsed onto the floor, saturating the ground with blood, while his companions looked on with astonishment. Ezra did not know how long the play had gone on before he could meet their eyes.
Ezra?
Alex stuttered, not knowing what to say.
Jesus.
He wanted someone to listen.
Ezra returned the derringer beneath his sleeve.
I did.